I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. Today on Change Surfer Radio, we're going to be listening to two talks on the ethics of artificial intelligence. They were both given on June 28, 2003 at Yale University at the Transvision Conference. The first will be by David Calvary. He'll be talking about imagining an artificial intelligence as a legal entity. David Calvary is an attorney.
So let me set the scene for you. And if you begin by imagining that you're sitting in a laboratory, you're surrounded by black boxes, and against one side of a wall, there's a rank of vaguely humanoid-looking objects, say, not too different from R2-D2 in Star Wars. The year is 25 years from now, 2028, and it's a warm, muggy day in early summer. You're a research scientist working on the latest iterations of the Artelect project, a DARPA-funded program reminiscent of the Apollo space program. As you sit in your lab at a prestigious Eastern Ivy League university, not dissimilar to the one that we're at today, you suddenly hear noise outside, more than the normal hum of traffic and student voices. Quickly, you realize that the voices you hear are, in fact, angry voices. As the sound builds and the background noise begins to roar, you can pick out snippets of chants. Free the Artelects, Frankenstein, murderer. A chill runs down your spine because you know that it's your lab that is being targeted by the radical group People for the Ethical Treatment of Artelects. PETA. Horrified, your mind flashes back to conversations you had with your mother before her death 20 long years ago. She was a brilliant woman, a research scientist in the early 1970s at this very same institution. Her health and her profession were crushed in 1976 when a bomb exploded in her lab one Saturday morning as she opened the door. She was on her way to feed the rhesus monkeys on which she had performed many of her neurological experiments. No one had ever been implicated in her maiming, but the bombing had taken place just 6 weeks after a series of bitter on-campus confrontations between academic scientists, including your mother, and members of a group known as People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA. Is this far-fetched? I suggest not. Why? Only a little imagination is needed to see how such a scenario can develop. Not only that, unless we take steps to actively prevent such a scenario from happening, I think that as proponents of transhumanist future, we may find that we're unable to control or perhaps even fully understand some of the forces that could be aligned against us. I think we have to develop a high degree of sensitivity to the dilemmas that we all could be facing in a few short years. And I think it's helpful to look to historical precedent for ways in which other sets of legal rights have developed. Or, as we have all heard, to the point of cliché, if you don't learn from history, you are bound to repeat it. If we look at the animal rights movement and begin to learn some lessons, we see that the animal rights movement started as a reaction to what I call the Judeo-Christian history of the treatment of animals. And that essentially means that in the Bible and in Aristotelian philosophy, and in fact most philosophies up through the early 20th century, animals had been generally treated as property which could be exploited by man and not subject to the same moral concerns as man. Jeremy Bentham began to view in his utilitarian philosophy, began to view animals as worthy of equal consideration. And that was one of the earliest examples where animals were treated as something other than property. With the authorship in 1975, I believe, of Animal Liberation by Peter Singer, people's consciousness began to be raised with respect to animals as having basic rights. Rights inherent with the animal, which could be legally protected. And I think what we saw with the animal rights movement was the staking out of a philosophical position, a development of an interest in that position, both at the level of the media, and then in terms of very identified special interest groups across a wide spectrum. Essentially, what happened in the animal rights movement, I believe, is that the popular imagination was captured, and then a structure was developed to justify that underlying premise. Debate was carried on in academic circles, and there have been constant debate for the last 25 years on whether animals are in fact conscious, whether they are entitled to rights, if they are entitled to rights, what those rights are. The issue of consciousness, sentience, the types of criteria that permit you to ascribe moral value to an animal are all issues which I believe will and can be applied to artelics. If we can imagine rights for animals, I think it's only a short step to how we can articulate those rights for an artificial intelligence. However, I think that there's a threshold question that needs to be addressed, and it's a question of some importance to how the debate moves forward. And that is an artelic a machine, or is it another entity, another type of entity, which is really transcendent? I think you can draw a distinction between something which is, and this distinction I rely on Kenan Malik, who's a sociologist, wrote a book, Man, Beast, and Zombie. And the distinction he drew was between a moral subject and a moral object. A moral subject being an entity that would be responsible for, in a moral sense, responsible for its actions. A moral object would be something which is capable of having its value weighed in a moral sense, but not subject to moral judgments. With that distinction, I think you can look at the animal rights movement as an analog if consciousness is an emergent property. If, in fact, the end product is something that does have, for lack of a better definition, free will, rational autonomy at the end of the process. I think that that developmental process, and again, I'm contracting a much broader argument here, is something that we need to take into account for two reasons. First, the end product, which is the creation of the artelect, but more importantly, the entire developmental process of the artelect. At some point during that developmental process, you get into the same argument that you would get into as you do today with respect to abortion, and that is when life begins. When does consciousness begin? Is there a point in the continuum where it is immoral to carry the experiment further? I think if we keep these issues in mind, look at how the animal rights movement developed, we can clearly imagine legal rights for an artificial intelligence. Those legal rights will be premised and based on moral and ethical considerations, which are no different than things we have routinely and recognized in the past. I think that if we are able to do that, we can then, in the future, on a warm, sunny day, still be sitting in our lab, surrounded by black boxes, looking at our R2-D2 creations, comfortable in the knowledge that the noise we hear outside the window is only the hum of traffic punctuated by the occasional laughter from groups of students sitting on the quadrangle, and not something more dire. Thank you.
Now we're going to hear a talk by Wendell Wallach. He's going to be talking about robot morals, creating an artificial moral agent. He gave this talk on June 28, 2003, at the TransVision 2003 conference at Yale University.
It took evolution 500 million years to evolve complex nervous systems capable of consciousness and moral judgments, and engineers are now proposing to repeat this feat in somewhere between 50 and 100 years, 30 to 100 depending on whose estimates you're looking at. I'm going to open with a quick prediction that the engineering project directed at creating artificial moral agents will radically alter our understanding of human decision-making, ethics, and consciousness, particularly in clarifying whether these faculties are reproducible in mechanical systems. Research into robotics will revitalize ethics, just as AI research has stimulated renewed interest in the philosophy of mind. Do you all remember this guy? The ED-209, a product of the Omnia Consumer Products, which failed in its initial demonstration before the board of the company and took out in a rather bloody sequence a junior exec being used in the demonstration. The Omnia 209 was a crime-fighting robot. But Omnia Consumer Products did have another strategy, RoboCop. The ED-209 and RoboCop do demonstrate two fundamentally different trajectories in the development of artificial intelligence. The first is AI as a complement or adjunct to human decision making, and the second is artificial intelligence directed toward creating systems, either software agents or robotic systems with some degree of autonomy. When we talk about AI under the direct control of human operators, there's actually going to be limited need for inbuilt restraints on moral decision-making capabilities within the robotic design. Because the responsibility for the behavior of these systems is largely going to reside with the companies that develop the systems, the operators who are utilizing the systems to perform particular tasks, and it should largely be covered by existing laws for product safety and liability. This kind of research is directed at both computer-assisted decision support and prosthetic devices, both for therapeutic needs and enhancement of human skills, as everyone here knows, and may eventually lead to neural links between humans and computers and cyborgs. In research directed in this area of artificial intelligence, we can more or less presume that the moral responsibility will remain within the brain of the individual utilizing the technology. And therefore, our primary ethical challenge is really to ensure that the symbiotic integration of humans and artificial faculties doesn't harm human operators or interfere with their capacity to use their moral judgment. I'm going to direct more of my talk to autonomy and the development of autonomous systems. The greater the freedom of a machine, the more it will need moral standards. That's a quote from Ross Picard at MIT. And the simple fact is, from robo-pets to autonomic computing, we are moving in the direction of creating artificial systems that display increasing degrees of autonomy. The real question is, how much autonomy are we going to feel comfortable in granting these systems? And if we don't feel comfortable, we can be sure that there will be legislation to stop further development of these systems. When we consider robot morality, or the morality of autonomous systems, of course, a primary question is whose morality or what morality? And the engineering question is really what kind of morality or which of our ethical theories are computationally interesting? That is, which of them can we really implement in a computer system? We're really talking about the application of differing theories of moral agency to artificial systems and the establishment of criterion tests for determining whether an artificial system is an adequate moral agent. I tend to think that there are, we can talk about roughly three stages in this development. The first is operational morality, which we can actually think as the basic safety of systems. And that's more or less where we are today. We're still trying to ensure that AI systems are able to distinguish between humans and other objects in their environment, map the environment that they move through, like Asimov, move and on 2 feet and be able to perform basic kind of mobility without, for example, harming the human beings that it interacts with, or falling over a baby would be an example of a seriously detrimental activity. The second stage is limited autonomy, which means systems that are just beginning to display the ability to make choices, to apply judgments and limited moral reasoning to unique situations. And eventually we may actually emerge on what I call moral intelligence, the ability of an autonomous system to make moral judgments equivalent to or exceeding those of a human being. When we think of the fallibility of human decision-making and the extent to which we cause harm to each other, there's a question about whether it will be considered acceptable for artificial entities to merely display moral behavior equivalent to humans, or whether we're going to truly demand that they have superior moral behavior. When we think about robot morality, there's just really a broad range of interdisciplinary subjects that arise. The first is moral responsibility. How feasible is it to hold an artificial agent responsible for its actions? And what minimum standards would it have to meet in order to be designated as a moral agent? Can mindless systems be considered moral agents? And what are the criterion tests that we're going to develop to evaluate the moral aptitudes of these artificial entities? It's been proposed that maybe we need something like a moral Turing test, though the Turing test itself, as many of you are aware, it is kind of a flawed criteria for evaluating artificial systems. When you think about implementing morality into an artificial system, there are three basic strategies that usually come to mind. The first that usually comes up is top-down morality. Most of you have heard of Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics, but when you think about it, they are just one example of fundamental principles that tend to override all secondary concerns that come into play in morality. And other examples of a top-down theory would be the Golden Rule, utilitarianism, Kant's moral imperative, the Ten Commandments, the virtues. When Asimov described his three laws of robotics, he developed a whole series of stories, which I'm sure some of you have read at least a few of. And each story more or less reveals how limited these laws are or what happens when the laws come into conflict with each other. And the laws were basically very simple. They were largely about not harming human beings, obeying human beings, and surviving. So, in effect, these stories were illustrating that in any rule-based system, for an entity to really apply those rules, it needs a very broad understanding, a very broad knowledge base, an understanding of how those rules apply in different contexts. And again, this implies sophisticated software architecture that can manage all that information and that can manage situations in which the rules conflict. One area in which humans are, at least presently, vastly superior to any form of artificial intelligence is in our ability to manage contradictions, vagueness, situations in which information is inadequate. And that's why, so far, really the best use of computers is in assisting human decisions, but leaving the actual decisions to the human agents themselves. The implementation of internal systems capable of managing decisions where our information is inadequate or contradictory or murky is going to be quite difficult. The second strategy that usually is suggested for introducing morality is bottom-up morality. And basically, this is the contention that's coming up throughout the social sciences and evolutionary psychology, that a great deal of human morality is an emergent property of evolution. And so in the computer world, we have genetic algorithms and experiments and artificial life all directed at evolving new intelligent life forms or new forms of minds. And the question is, to what extent will these computer models give rise to some rudimentary morality? One thing that has come out of these artificial life experiments so far is that it looks like cooperative entities at least are a very effective strategy for survival over non-cooperators. But the difficulty with artificial life experiments to this point is they've tended to stagnate, and we don't know whether it's going to require richer computer architecture to move them forward or whether we need to define more richly the kinds of environments that stimulate the emergence of artificial life, which is really the fundamental question of to what extent is evolution really a reflection of the environment and not just a mechanical unfoldment or emergent properties. The third strategy that comes up is computer learning and embodiment. And what we're really talking about here is the fact that most of us have learned about the complexity of moral dilemmas through learning about our culture, through confronting different issues, through reasoning through and feeling our way through those differing concerns. The primary experiment in trying to teach or embody a computer in a robot within its environment is Cog, who's pictured in the upper right there. at MIT. And Cog has really experimented to what extent can a robot learn through its interaction with its environment and other humans. For human moral development, there have been theories about bringing young people through various stages of moral development. Most importantly, Lawrence Kohlberg's, a theory which has often been criticized or revised by Carol Gilligan, but it has been applied through school systems all around the country. And Kohlberg argued that there were stages of moral development and that children could reason through from one stage to another, and even adults go to higher stages of moral development. He was a bit cynical about how far most adults had actually evolved morally. And in the school systems, they've implemented a kind of educational procedure to move children more rapidly through these developmental stages, or at least the lower developmental stages. One advantage that might occur if we could teach a robot to develop through these various stages of moral understanding is perhaps once we had done this with one robot, we could then take that software module and implement it in other systems. Self-adapting and self-healing systems. Autonomic computing is directed at that. And the real problem we have is we can't always predict what's going to happen in the behavior of an artificial system once it's altered. We can't do that when we reprogram them. Surprising results take place. And we don't really know that once we talk about systems that can learn or change their program, whether we can actually ensure that in the process of learning they won't override any inbuilt restraints or violate basic moral tenets. Affective computing. A big issue in human morality has always been the role of emotions, whether they're really a benefit or a detriment to morality. On the one hand, we have the view of the Stoics that moral reasoning is largely about learning how to override our emotions. On the other hand, we have this contemporary view of emotional intelligence and the kind of research coming from people like Antonio Damasio that suggests that emotions are really essential to any decision making. With the lack of emotions in artificial systems, will they be an advantage or a disadvantage in their moral acumen? And what kind of design strategies, if they are a disadvantage, what kinds of design strategies do we have for implementing affective skills in artificial agents? Empathy and the awareness of affective states in humans. A great deal of morality depends upon our perceiving how our actions are affecting each other. So there's going to be at least some necessity for artificial moral agents to discern and honor the emotions they perceive in the humans they're interacting with. And evidence of empathy, whether it's real or not, may be essential if humans are going to feel comfortable in accepting artificial moral agents. The possible limits of AMA. Does morality and full autonomy require that an AA demonstrate evidence of being conscious? When we think of moral agency in human beings, we basically presume that they can distinguish between good and bad. They understand the meaning of their actions. They have the freedom to choose between different courses of action. And if they don't, we consider them mentally ill and therefore not free moral agents. So we're really dealing with the question of, is consciousness essential for full autonomy, for full moral behavior? Or the opposite way of putting it is, how far can we get with moral behavior through simple mindless processing of information? I was going to talk about this much more, but I think I'm going to have to skip that a bit. Possible advantages that AMAs have. The first one, of course, is presumably an artificial moral agent will not be subject to emotional hijackings. But some way or other, we're going to, even if we build emotions in, we aren't going to build emotions in a way that they can override any form of moral judgment or reasonable judgment. But another possible advantage that an AMA may have is that in its ability to process large quantities of information and analyze the potential results from many courses of actions, the computers may be superior to humans in making judgments. When you think of it, a great deal of our ethics, a great deal of our value systems is largely directed at our setting priorities, given the fact that oftentimes we really can't handle all the information that is implied in a particular challenge. legal responsibilities. Who's responsible when an AA fails to meet legal and ethical guidelines? What recourse is there available for punishing the AA? Probably none. Cooperation. When we talk about cooperation, we're not only talking about ensuring that there's cooperation between humans and the artificial entities, but we're also talking about similar entities being able to work together toward a common goal. And also we're going to need to develop interface standards that allow agents to interact and cooperate with other classes of artificial entities. Once Garry Kasparov was beat by Deep Blue 2 in chess, there was a new challenge that came up, and that was robo-soccer, because it was realized that chess doesn't really represent the breadth of human capabilities. Robo-soccer is directed at a robot, at a team of robots beating a world-class team of soccer players within 50 years. The 50 years underlines the fact of how difficult we recognize that this challenge is going to be. When you remember Kennedy's challenge to put a man on the moon, he actually proposed it for a decade with much less sophisticated technology than we have today. What design strategies do we have for building restraints into the behavior of artificial agents? And is there any limitation on the reliability and safety of existing design strategies? Limiting reproductive rights. We're definitely going to need this if we're going to arrest the imminent robot takeover of humanity. What are the dangers? Which avenues of research in the development of artificial agents hold potential dangers that we can foresee, and how will we address these dangers? Which of these dangers could be managed in the design of systems, and which dangers may require the relinquishment of further research? Can we control the capacity of AMAs to eventually reproduce? And can we deny them the right to do that if we have superconsciousness? What areas of concern will need regulation and oversight, and how might this be managed in a manner that doesn't interfere with scientific progress? I don't know whether we're going to succeed or fail in implementing artificial intelligence, implementing moral behavior in artificial systems. I think there's a fundamental question about whether the computational strategies we now have will yield anything like consciousness. And it seems that that's seriously important if we're going to talk about full autonomy for artificial entities. But in the process of trying to create an artificial moral agent, we're going to learn a tremendous amount about human ethics, decision-making, communications, and consciousness. And perhaps there'll be a side benefit of that, which will be an increased understanding, perhaps an improvement in the relationship of us humans to each other.
Today on Change Surfer Radio, we heard two talks about the ethics of artificial intelligence. The first was by David Calvary, an attorney. He talked about imagining an artificial intelligence as a legal entity. And the second was by Wendell Wallach, who spoke on robot morals, creating an artificial moral agent. Both talks were given on June 28, 2003 at Transvision 2003. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future, brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@IEET.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at IEET.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy, high-tech, and yet radically democratic future.